From the Kansas Legislative Division of Post Audit, this is The Rundown, your source for news and updates from LPA, including performance audits recently released to the Kansas Legislature. I'm Amy Brienzo. It's December 2019, which means it's time for LPA's inaugural Year in Review episode of The Rundown. This episode will give us a chance to reflect on the division's highlights from the last year, including our important accomplishments and the multitude of changes we've made. To do this, I'm joined in the studio by Justin Stowe, the Legislative Post Auditor. Welcome back to The Rundown, Justin.
Glad to be here, Andy.
Congratulations on a great year. The division accomplished some big things, including receiving a prestigious national award and top marks on its triennial peer review. Tell me about the division's accomplishments over the last year and what you're most proud of.
Sure. So I agree this year has been a really good year for our office and represents, we've made a lot of changes in a lot of areas that represent some real progress. So highlighting the two that you've mentioned already. So we did win a national award for excellence in research methodology this year. That comes from a group under NCSL, or the National Conference for State Legislators, provided us that award. And it was actually related to our work on evaluating CanCare, the state's Medicaid program. And so kind of the unique thing about our approach in that audit is we use some pretty sophisticated modeling to make sure we could determine what Kansas's CanCare program's actual effect was on Medicaid spending by itself, other factors notwithstanding. So, for example, obviously the age of Medicaid participants, their general health, their well-being, some of those factors obviously have a huge role in how much Medicaid costs the state. We wanted to hold those things constant so we could get a real sense of how Kansas's program specifically was affecting costs. So we were recognized for the work that we did out there, and I think it was some very unique and challenging work that the team had undertaken. Then secondly, we did go through our peer review process this year. We do that every 3 years. That's part of our obligation in claiming that we follow generally accepted government auditing standards. That's the standard set by the federal government. And so that's always a very robust and thorough process. It involves us being evaluated against hundreds of items in the standards that we follow, some intense review by a small team of colleagues in other states offsite, and then it included a one-week on-site review where they came and actually talked with us and met with us to discuss what they'd seen. So both of those, I think, represent significant achievements, and I'm very, very proud of the people that are involved in that work.
So longtime readers of LPA audit reports will notice that we made some big changes to the way we write these reports in 2019. What are these changes and what prompted them?
So one of the things that we have wanted to do for years, at least at the management level here, is to transition from hard copy reports to web-based reports. That has a lot of advantages, we think, in terms of making it easier to transmit our work to legislators and the general public. It confers some advantages in terms of being mobile friendly and allowing us to incorporate audio and video. So that's been a longstanding goal, but that has always been, has kind of been a significant challenge because it represents a very different way of thinking about how we present our work. Obviously, communicating through web pages is a little bit different than in a printed version. And so it's kind of been this thing that we've always looked at but never really been willing to tackle. So this past year, we decided to make that change. And so what I did is I challenged the audit supervisors, who are the ones really responsible for taking the lead in writing our reports, to come up with some innovative ways of thinking about how we present our results. And so we took multiple stabs at that. The first one that we tried was actually on the animal facilities inspection audit. And then in subsequent audits, we kind of refined and polished that initial model until we got to where we were comfortable. So it not only represents a slimmer version of our report, so whereas we had previously averaged about 40 pages a report, we are down somewhere closer to around 20. And so we've almost cut our report length in half using the new writing approach. And that represents a pretty significant savings to the office in terms of time. We estimated it could potentially allow us to do two more audits every year, which is not insignificant given that we only average about 10 to 12 regular audits in a given year.
All our listeners will, of course, be aware that we started the rundown during 2019 as well, making LPA the first state audit office to use a podcast series to disseminate its audit results. I understand this has been well received across the street in the State House, so tell me about that.
That was an idea that I was warm to and kind of receptive to, but I didn't really recognize, I think, the full potential impact of podcasts on getting our message out and getting our work made more easily available to legislators. So one of the things that I consistently hear is, of course, because Kansas is a very rural state and many of our committee members have to drive long distances to get here when they have meetings, that having our results available to them in a podcast form has allowed them to upload those podcasts to their mobile device and then using Bluetooth, just listen to that on their drive-in. So that's something that until they had mentioned it to me, I hadn't even really considered as being the primary benefit of podcasts, which is it makes our work a lot more accessible to folks that are on the road. And then just moreover, I think it provides kind of a different way of receiving the same content. So, of course, it's always a little bit different to hear something rather than read it. So I think adding that dimension gives our work a little bit more visibility in the sense that it just provides yet one more way to understand what we've been doing and what we've been finding in terms of how well Kansas government is working. Our colleagues in research and the revisor's office, which are the lawyers that are responsible for writing state law, have found our podcast to be useful because they on occasion want to keep track of what we're doing and what we're finding because it will impact them in terms of the bills they potentially have to draft or research that they might be asked to conduct as a result of some of our findings. So kind of surprising to me, we actually have an audience there and some of our colleagues are downloading and listening to those podcasts as well.
So all these changes are ultimately meant to support and enhance LPA's day-to-day work, which is, of course, producing audits. So what kinds of audits did the division conduct in 2019?
Yeah, so we've had a number of really good audits this year. One of the things that we took a look at was online sales tax, which has become a really big issue in Kansas. And that deals specifically with whether or not you're taxed for purchasing goods from large companies like Amazon or eBay. Those large companies, Kansas already has laws in the books that allow us to collect, but it's companies like that, but maybe the smaller volume businesses. There's kind of a small segment of retailers that we're not currently capturing. So we did an audit to evaluate that issue, concluded that actually in Kansas, it turns out because we do have laws on the big retailers, we're capturing most of that revenue, but that there was an opportunity to perhaps collect a little bit more. I think our estimates were $40, $60 million range of total possible revenues that could be generated if we tax those additional businesses. We've also done some work looking at some of the state's economic development incentives. So we looked at the Economic Development Initiatives Fund and how that money was being used, found out that about half of that fund, which is $40 million, was not being used for economic development as intended. We also took a look at the Department of Commerce Job Creation Fund, which is a fund that allows the Department of Commerce to close deals with businesses. And found that there are some weak controls around how that money is distributed in terms of how the decisions are made and where that money goes and why it's being given. Didn't always make sense to us in some cases. So we've taken some look at areas concerning economic development. And then finally, most recently, we just released our K-12 audit of at-risk funding. We have some significant concerns in that audit about whether the state's use of its $400 million for at-risk funding is actually being used specifically for at-risk students in the classroom. So a lot of depth in that audit, but some really concerning issues there that we've just recently released. Perhaps a lesser known part of our work are the IT security audits we do. And I say lesser known simply because those audits are kept confidential permanently because revealing their contents could jeopardize the security of the agencies that we're auditing. So once every 3 years, we do produce a public summary of the results of that work, which is actually coming up this year. So that's something that we'll be releasing early this session, so sometime in January, February of 2020. And that basically looks over the last 3 years, and we hide the agency's identities, but that allows us to discuss some of the thematic issues that we've been discovering without putting any of the agencies individually at risk. So that's a report that we do in. But that's some very important work that we do in the state. Again, only our legislative committee members and a few legislative committees like the Joint Committee on Information Technology really hear the results of those audits. but I think an important part of the work we do in addition to the performance side.
Finally, although this is a year in review podcast, let's look ahead to 2020 for just a minute. What challenges or changes might be on the horizon for LPA during the upcoming year, and what are you most excited about?
So maybe not surprisingly to me, these are kind of one and the same, but one of the things that we are going to start taking on per some recent legislation that was approved last session are a systematic review of the state's economic development tax incentives. And so our post-audit committee approved two additional staff positions, and the Legislative Coordinating Council did as well. So at this point in the budget process, it looks likely that we will have two more staff to help us conduct that work. We'll also need to use and rely on some outside contractors with some subject matter expertise in economic evaluations, I think, especially down the road as those ramp up. So we're in the process right now of planning for that. What we've done currently is developed an inventory of the economic development tax incentives the state has that fall under our purview per state law. And once that is fully assembled, we will work with the post-audit committee to determine which of those incentives they want to put on our three-year schedule, which is the cycle that is defined in state law currently, the evaluation cycle. So I think they'll be very value-added here in Kansas. That's something that a lot of other states are already doing and doing well. So Kansas is actually lagging other states in the nation in evaluating its tax incentives. But because it is new to us and because we're just starting out, I think there will also be some significant challenges just in terms of understanding how best to conduct those evaluations. We also know just from our initial research that it's very likely that the state is not doing a great job of tracking data on a lot of these tax incentive programs. So it may not be possible for us to conduct the evaluations we want to, especially in the early couple of years. So just a lot to learn there, a lot to discover as we work through that process. But I think ultimately, once we get that function up and running and developed, it will provide a lot of insight to legislators on how taxpayer money is being used and the most effective ways to use that money. So then in addition to, you know, the economic development tax incentive function, another change going forward that I'm excited to watch is the development of our internship and fellowship program. So that's something that we started just last year. And the intent behind that is for us to have an opportunity to get to know potential job candidates a little better. And so we feel like even though we've had some really good success lately in hiring some really talented people, you know, hiring in government is always a challenge. And especially in our profession where, you know, performance is not something that's really taught in university settings. So it's really a profession that has to be learned on the job. Finding the right individual for this work is challenging. And so one of the things that we really wanted to do is introduce individuals to our office and our work before we have to make a hiring decision and go through that process and give them the opportunity to get a better, like, firsthand view of what we do on a day-to-day basis to decide if it's something they may want to do. So I'm very hopeful that both the internship and the fellowship program going forward will help us recruit more talented individuals that are better fit for this work and will reduce the costs associated with that hiring process.
Justin Stowe is the Legislative Post Auditor. Thanks for taking the time to join me in the studio, Justin.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Thank you for listening to The Rundown. To hear more podcasts, subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. For more information about Legislative Post Audit and our audit reports, visit our website at kslpa.org and follow us on Twitter @KSAudit.